I'm aware of the fact that I'm the designated Roman on this panel, though judging by some of the coverage in the press, the Monbiot article obviously, but also a huge annual furore in the US about college textbook pricing, I may as well consider myself to be a Christian and hear the sounds, the not so distant sounds of lions in the background. Contrary to what it says in the abstract, I'm not here to do an advertorial for Sage. I want to use the opportunity here to just put out some reflective remarks on what might be the basis on which academic publishers feel able to flourish and succeed commercially and in those intangible ways 10 years from now. So a bit of future gazing, a crystal ball, if you like. I'm also aware of the fact that this audience is too sophisticated to need a basic rehearsal of what value publishers add. I mean, if people want to debate it afterwards, but we're all very familiar with it, many of you, probably most of you in the room, are actually representatives of it. So rather than do that, I'd really rather try and look at the characteristics of where academic publishing is going and what the conditions under which it may feel able to flourish. Despite the controversies, despite the debates that are flying and raging at the moment, I think that academic publishing is still in quite robust health. Not just commercially, but also culturally and qualitatively. I asked a group of people at Sage a few days ago, large group, whether they felt proud to answer the question, what do you do, by saying I work in academic publishing? And the vast majority raised their hands. The question that occurs to me is, will that be the case in 10 years from now? Or will they sound more like my sister, who, working in advertising, often quotes the line from Ogilvy and Mayfair, don't tell my mother I work in advertising, she thinks I'm a pianist in a brothel. I'd like to think that academic publishing has got a lot to offer in 10 years from now as well as right now. And as a way of trying to sort of run up to that thought, I wanted to just talk a little bit about the nature of the industry as it is now, but then move quickly into the kind of the near future and then some long-term predictions. And I'm aware of the fact that it's the weather forecaster's vice in selling the promissory note that they'll be predicting the future. Most of the weather program is about how the weather was today, which is obviously much easier to talk about. But it is worth having as a baseline an understanding of what we as an industry look like right now, even if we then need to update that self-image. So it's vastly big. I think that people don't always realize that. I think the tally for the number of scholarly articles published in the last year was about 3 million and published by about 20,000 publishers. The scale of the spend of the different markets, represented by the fact that the US higher education college market is about $5 billion, the academic library market is about $4 billion, according to Outsell, and once you add on government sector libraries and public libraries and corporates, it's more like 23. It's an extraordinarily big and diverse and global industry. And these 20,000 publishers are doing very significant and complicated work within that context. The nature of the spread of that population of academic publishers is a very large head and an extremely long tail. So within the large head, we're familiar with the fact that Elsevier et al., the multi-billion dollar journal publishers, represent one extreme. Similarly, on the college text model, there's the Cengages and the McGraws, also multi-billion dollar organizations and vast, and who have the heft and the power to invest in technology, invest in sales forces, do a lot of things that the authors of today need and develop new kinds of services and goods that weren't really envisioned years before. The downside for that category, the super big, is that they can look like the heartless corporates who make Rupert Murdoch look like a socialist. Was that the line? And more realistically, I think, actually, there tends to be a mismatch between author needs who, when dealing with a vast organization, can struggle to feel like they are being personally recognized. On the flip side, when you look at that long tail of organizations ranging from university presses and learned societies and smaller independent publishers, you get a lot of that sort of warm and fuzzy, a lot of that sense of being aligned with academic and scholarly values, a lot of that sense of academics feeling that they're going to get a relationship But a few question marks on the fact that operating on a global scale as publishing has to do today, whether it's easy for those publishers to actually position themselves adequately and to create the dissemination that's needed. And so obviously there's a tension there. Now, the industry is moving into is in dramatic transition that's commentated on so often. And that's where I guess we can see the trends that are emerging. We know that there are huge regional shifts going on. We know that the kind of balance of power in both the consumption of content and the production of content is changing dramatically. One anecdote about this that I heard when I was in a series of meetings in Beijing was from a friend of mine who's a professor of chemistry there, who pointed out that this is the first year that the Royal Society of Chemistry's published journal output has exceeded any other country. In previous years, I mean, for some time now, there's been a larger submission from China, but this is the first year the actual published output has exceeded any other country, including the US. Just one of those straws in the wind, indicating one of those dramatic changes going on. Similarly, huge changes in the way publishers and libraries are communicating with each other, the activism of the consortia, the funders, the changing of the government mandates, all, and the rise of business models like open access. All of it, obviously, we're all engaged with in different ways today. And the business models also extend to how we're going to provide goods and services that support both the dissemination of education on the one hand and the dissemination of scholarship on the other hand to meet changing needs. And I think that's where it's worth just turning into slightly more of the future gazing, because it seems to me that while we talk about how publishers need to be innovative, it needs a bit of unpacking somewhat. Innovation isn't just one thing. And when you look at the needs in the education sector, the teaching, pedagogy sector, if you like, versus scholarly sector, I think you can see significant differences. On the education or the higher education side of it, it feels like a market that's storming. No one actually knows what the hell is going on. The big college text publishers are experimenting lots of different ways, but it's not like anyone's come up with anything like a viable model. The threat is that E equals free, that there are device wars all over the place. There don't seem to be sufficiently emergent and robust business models that are going to kind of make sure there's more opportunity than threat. And I think that has places demands on how publishers that want to succeed in the future are going to need to think about innovation, which I'll come back to. Whereas I think on the scholarly dissemination side, that market is more of that sort of norming rather than storming mode, if you like, in that, you know, while people outside the industry don't know it, people in the inside the industry have known for a long time that librarians have been consuming and purchasing digital products for a very long time. Journals have been available online for a very long time. And indeed, the release of new products are actually ones that have a genuine market and seem to meet genuine needs. We're very pleased with the launch of Sage Research Methods Online that we launched earlier this year, which really seems to have captured the imagination both of librarians and the faculty they serve. There's a lot of uptake, a couple of awards already, and it seems like that normed market seems to require a different kind of innovation on the part of the academic publishers. For the first kind, where it's actually very uncertain and unknown where it's heading, I think you need a kind of quite a nimble, fail-fast approach. I won't quite say spray and pray, but it definitely has that kind of characteristic, and be willing to learn from quite surprising feedback. And so if you put things out there, we for example, launched what we were very, very pleased with, an interactive e-textbook, An Introduction to Criminology by Hagen, fully featured, very impressive thing. Adopters, academics, very excited about it. Designed predominantly for the US market, where if that market ever norms, I think it will start in the US. The consequence was, while there was a lot of excitement amongst the adopters, they all then looked at the book. The consequence was that it trebled the sales of the print. The students weren't actually interested in actually taking the interactive ebook, even though that's what got the adopters talking. Those are the sort of nuggets and factoids we need to be able to do to incorporate and update our sense of what's going to work when we look at the higher education textbook market. Whereas I think on the more scholarly front, it seems clearer what the paths might be. So moving in more into that sort of prediction mode, I would say that I think there's going to be a struggle for academic publishers to thrive if they are too big or too small. And mainly for the reason that Richard Charkin was reminding us of this morning, which is the fundamental role of the publisher is to be the under-laborer for the author, or author, editor in society, if you like, the creator of intellectual property. And their needs are changing in such a way that it's a challenge, I think, for both the very big organizations and the very small ones. They want a complicated range of things. They want love and money. And as economists tell us, love doesn't scale. Whereas they want the royalties, dealing with societies these days, it's a cutthroat business, and contrary to Monbiot's claim that it's deals done in smoke-filled rooms, publishers are at each other's throats, trying to persuade societies to move their journals from one publisher to another. They also want prestige, prestige capital, as John Thompson calls it. They also want dissemination, readership. And so the onus on the publisher to meet those needs in the future is dramatically enhanced. In fact, I think the likelihood is that because of those prestige needs, the journal brand, I suspect, will maintain itself, that we won't switch into a completely article economy would be a prediction. I don't think open access will hit its tipping point. It's a significant part, maybe 5% of those 3 million articles, but I don't think it's going to be the takeoff point, and that's because of the way the authors are sounding, what they're claiming to want for themselves. We, I think, leave authors out of the picture too often. It can certainly happen in the intro text market, where it starts to move towards the sort of commodification of content. It's just content, whereas actually the producers of those content, those fragile and to some extent sort of ego-driven authors, are in need of a different kind of care and feeding in the future. And so, if you take that head and you take that long tail, and visualize it as circles, a circle of the very large multi-billion-dollar organization, and a circle of the smaller organization with those characteristics that meet the authors to different needs. It's, I think, the overlap between those in that Venn diagram that we have to think about. And that the academic publishers of the future, in 10 years' time, who are going to thrive ultimately, the ones who I think will actually really provide a genuine author proposition, which then leads to all the other things that authors care about, will be the ones who occupy that sweet spot. Thank you.